Hi, I'm Giancarlo Fisichella, and you are listening F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. Qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 719, January 30th, 2017. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I have to say I feel like a new man by Menin after a day at the races. How is life in Cali?
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Nasser is back from Daytona with special report and an interview with Bravo, Bravo, Bravo Fisico. Bernie says no way to breakaway series, and of course F1 Weekly now available on WROCK Radio, streaming on WLOR.net Wednesdays at 11 p.m. and Saturdays at 3 p.m., and of course, that's Eastern Standard Time. That's where you're at, Nasser. Welcome back from Daytona. Did you run into any caution?
Yes, actually, there was a caution there, and I have to say, you know, Daytona is a great place for race fans. This was my third attendance at the 24-hour race, and each year has been a great experience. And, you know, of course, the 24-hour race starts on Saturday, and there was a huge line of fans at different areas, parts of the pit and paddock area, where they were waiting to get, you know, autographs and have a chat with their favorite racing driver. So it's really, really nice to see that. And obviously, the highlight of this year was the opportunity to have a chat with one of our all-time F1 Weekly favorites, Fisico.
Fisico!
Yeah. And it is great to meet drivers after watching them in Formula One for years and years. And, you know, in the case of Fisichella, he had raced with a lot of teams. So it's a very strange thing, you know, that you're watching these people racing. And remember once he had an issue, I think it was with Jacques Villeneuve. He went to his pit and he was saying something in Italian.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, to watch all these things early morning in Cali and then one day you're sitting in front of them and chatting with them, it's a very good experience. I also tried very hard to connect with Nick Heidfeld because, you know, at a 24-hour race, Daytona especially, you have a lot of F1 veterans and people, you know, been very famous in motorsports. But as you know, when we go to a track, there's a lot of walking around, waiting around. And I did not want to have a situation where I had asked each and every member of the team where the PR person is. So I got his name and I, you know, went back again and again, just could not click with him. And quick Nick, you know, we always talk about drivers who did not win a lot of races or championships, but just like Fisico, Heidfeld has a very impressive CV, especially by the time he got to Formula One. And as we all know, then Kimi Raikkonen ate his Wiener Schnitzel and Apple Strudel also.
So true, so true. But you know, Ron Dennis, he knows how to make executive decisions.
Yeah, recently one was made for him.
And that's what happens. What goes around comes around, Nasser. We call it karma.
That is very true. You know, I'm walking around and there is this gentleman wearing like sort of, remember the glasses you were wearing at David Tapia's wedding, real hipster type?
You mean the ones I was wearing?
Yes.
Yes, everything I wear is hipster type.
Yeah, that was like a little advanced for yourself. But anyway, I saw a gentleman walking with similar type of glasses, and I said, looks like Jens Marquardt, head of BMW Motorsports. And, you know, BMW has a pretty big presence in Daytona, courtesy of Ray Hall team running their cars. So I asked him if he was Jens Marquardt, and he said, yeah, yeah. So I had a brief chat with him, and of course, as you know, BMW was the turbo engine to power the first F1 world champion with Piquet in 1983, with Bernie Owen Brabham. And according to him, there are no plans for the Munich-based manufacturer to get back in Formula One or even IndyCar racing. They have a strong presence in DTM and in US racing, a GT category with Rahal's team, like I said. So it's good to rub shoulders and chit-chat with, you know, people up there in the racing world. And speaking of Bernie, he has issued a statement to Reuters, which you mentioned, denying rumors that he's planning to start a rival series to Formula One. Did you think he would even think about it?
Well, he wanted to use the term Formula Eccleston, but that's, well, it's too close to Formula E. But anyway, the guy is over 80. Let's leave him alone. It's done. He's got a garden to take care of. He's got a wife that needs a lot of maintenance. So
yes, and yeah. But, you know, Formula One was Formula Bernie for almost 40 years.
Very, very true. It's unbelievable, but we knew the end was coming, and I believe that this is a new, fresh approach, and we'll see what Liberty Media has to do.
Yeah, they mean business. You don't spend $10 billion and then have somebody tell you what to do.
Correct.
And one team that is not missing in Bernie, I'm sure there's more than one, but one that is not missing Bernie at all is Sauber. And not surprisingly, team boss Miss Monisha Kaltenbaum has called on Liberty Media to address the distribution of revenue as soon as possible. The current commercial deal with the chosen few will expire in 2020. And Sauber's share of, just to give you an idea how minnow they are in this money game, Sauber's share of 2016 prize money was considerably less than what Ferrari received just in bonus payment. And of course, they normally pay it like a year and a half later. But so yeah, there is a serious case of have and have nots. And back in 2015, as you will recall, both Sauber and Force India made an official complaint to the EU Commission on this issue. And some lady in the, I think she's part of some political hierarchy in England, she's not too thrilled with hundreds of jobs being lost because of manner. So I think there will be some issue on this money situation with Formula One and the F1 teams.
Absolutely. And for all the young boys and girls that are listening, you are correct. Life is not fair. Thank you.
Yeah. And my take on that is, you know, life is not fair, so why complain about Formula One? But, you know, it's Formula One really has an issue that I guess it's the only sport probably that does not take care of its own. You know, you have to take care of the people that make up the grid. And this, I think, where Liberty will do a very good job, at least I hope so.
You mean the piranhas are going to be released to the wild?
No, the piranhas will become like politically correct piranhas.
Oh, I thought maybe Kamui Kobayashi could do a little chop, 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 chop.
Yes. So Kamui Kobayashi will be a good interview also. Yeah, do you remember his first race with Toyota in Brazil?
So exciting. We were all going, that was a breath of fresh air right there.
Yeah. And he's a pretty decent driver. Come to Brownie points. Ross Brawn is back in Formula One as head of motorsports for Liberty Media. There is a lot of talk of Formula One having 25 Super Bowls or Taylor Swift-style concert / F1 races, but the man who was behind the Schumacher-Ferrari domination of Formula One has stated that there must be quality over quantity, and it will require a change in mentality of the teams. There were 21 races in last year, 2016, but this year it will be back to 20 as the German Grand Kapur. Do you think they should go up to 25 races?
No, no. I'm with Ross. Let's have 16 to 20 races, but quality races. You know.
Yeah, I mean, given these experiments in India, Korea, China, Azerbaijan, you know, there is saying, you know, in about a year or two, both Malaysia and Singapore will be saying Dasvidaniya to Formula One racing. But I'm happy that the French Grand Prix is coming back in 2018, next year, at Paul Ricard, and I understand you've already made your reservation with Norwegian Airlines?
Correct.
Return fare for $299?
$299 plus tax.
Very good, very good.
Yes, I'll be staying at my brother's house in Aix-en-Provence.
How far is that from Puerto Rico?
I have no clue, but I could Google it if you want.
But it's not, I mean, it's not like a 7-hour drive, I think.
No. It's a very short drive when you're driving a Citroën.
Yeah, exactly. And I very much hope we go back to Argentina in the near future. I would love to see a race in, I mean, just look at how popular and how big of a crowd shows up at the Dakar Rally in South America. So you can imagine the interest in attendance at the, you know, Grand Prix in Buenos Aires or wherever they do it, as long as they don't charge, you know, $700 for a ticket.
Yeah, but you know, Argentina has good hot dogs.
Yes. Well, they're famous for beef, as you may already know.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of talk, talking of hot dogs, there is a lot of talk and interest in a second Grand Prix in the United States in what Chase Carey called Destination City. We are talking L.A., Las Vegas, Miami, and New York City. And I was thinking, you know, with Liberty Media, I'm pretty sure they're based in Manhattan. It would be interesting to see if they can bring a Grand Prix in their own backyard. Where would you like to see, seriously, a second U.S. Grand Prix?
Honestly, I'd like to see it in New York State, Watkins Glen. Let's bring it back, baby.
No, you know, that track is owned by International Speedway Corporation, the France family. I don't think they're going to be too thrilled in spending $70, $80 million to come up to F1 standards. I would love to see it in either California, New York, or Miami.
Yeah, in the state that you live in.
No, it's, you know, these areas have big population and very diversified clientele, and I think there will be a big interest in Formula One.
Well, not only that, but Miami is also known as Juan Pablo Montoya Town.
Yeah, exactly. And he could be the official grandmaster for the hot dog ceremonies.
That would be fantastic.
Yes, sir. Now, a street, this is good news, a street in Nice has been named after the late French driver Jules Bianchi, who was born in that city in 1989 and used to live in a nearby town called Brignoles. And the team Jules drove for Manor will be gone from the Grand Prix grid when the season starts in Melbourne in March. The Big Brother holding company has failed to land a white knight, leaving the team busted flat in Banbury, if not in Baton Rouge. Your thoughts on Manor disappearing?
I think it's sad. We're down to 20 cars. I'm not happy about it. I was hoping that somebody would buy the team. Anybody. Eddie Jordan may have been able to find some sponsor money. Somebody. Even Liberty Media, I was hoping, would maybe grant them some kind of a loan. But it just didn't happen.
Yeah, you know, this gentleman who had taken over the company, Stephen Fitzpatrick, he's getting a lot of flack in certain parts of the racing media that there were several offers that were brought to him, but he was asking for a price that was not reasonable. And then I also read that he was sort of negotiable on the price, but then he wanted some shareholding in the company. And also there was this issue of, you know, the Jules Bianchi accident and litigation coming from the family. So I agree with you there. Liberty should have, you know, given them some advance money and helped them stay in the business. But hopefully, you know, with Ross Brawn, they have somebody who understands the business and he is not chasing money. I mean, he doesn't need to. But this guy who has passion for motor racing, which outweighs his passion for money, so I think this would be a good hire for them.
Absolutely.
Now, a change of color may follow changing of the guard at McLaren. February 24, 2017, we will know what the new colors are for Team McLaren Honda. Rumors and hints from the team are that they will go back to the days when McLaren cars were orange in Can-Am, in Formula One. The team had used orange in preseason testing in recent years, but the recently departed from the team, Ron Dennis, used to say, and I quote, "It was the old color of McLaren. Why the hell do we want to go backwards?" Unquote. Well, under the new management, they may go back to the future, and let's hope the team and Honda package are competitive, because we need Nando to get championship number 3 before he's going más rápido at Le Mans and Daytona.
So true, so true. I possibly believe that this could be Fernando's last season, especially if the Honda package is stinko.
Yeah, if he does not win a race, I will not be surprised if he says adios, amigo.
Yeah, he'll go talk to the Le Mans boys. He's already talked about wanting to do some endurance racing, and there's plenty of that to go around.
Yeah, I'm sure a team like Toyota or Porsche will throw him a lot of money. There's no question about it.
Exciting.
If Toyota can pay Ralf Schumacher $25 million a year, I'm sure they can do something similar for Nando. What a coup that would be for them.
Fantastic coup. And, boy, we don't talk about half Schumacher very often, do we?
No, we don't. Question for you. Would you like McLaren in orange?
To be honest with you, it really doesn't. I really don't care because I'm sort of with, you know, I'm with Dennis on this one. That was our old color. You know, if they have already, I mean, French Racing Blue is French Racing Blue. There are a number, you know, so many teams are based in England. They can't go come out in British Racing Green. So orange would be fine. The most important color I want is speed, pole position, Fernando winning.
Yeah, you know, if they were winning, then, you know, you can paint any color, it will look good. Yeah, I think we need a little, some sort of exciting color from McLaren and other teams. You know what I would also, you probably know that in Formula 1 and same with GP2 and GP3, teams, they are required to have substantially same color scheme for both cars. And I think they should relax that also, maybe Liberty will. So this way, you know, you don't have to go and sell minimum $10 million of signage. You can have for $5 million for one car. And it used to be like that in the old days. So that's something I would, I think, like to see.
I concur. No, absolutely. I completely agree. I mean, they should be able to split it up but to be able to bring in more sponsorship. We all know that McLaren has struggled to get sponsorship, so...
Yeah, but let me tell you something. With Zak Brown being there, who was the guru of sponsorship searches, they will find a sponsor sooner or later, a substantial one. And, you know, frankly, I will not be surprised because I know when UPS was involved in NASCAR with Dale Jarrett, he was handling the UPS account. I will not be surprised if he brings a very big-name American sponsor to McLaren.
I hope so. Now, with Liberty Media on board, I think this is the time for a big American company to come on board.
Yeah.
eBay.
There you go. How about eHarmony?
eHarmony. Oh, and the guy's name is Clark.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine.
Well, that's good. Now, talking of money and money matters, ExxonMobil will be the fuel supplier to Red Bull Racing. And Renault has signed with BP and their Castrol brand for the 2017 season, which I have to ask you, what are your homeboys going, Total?
I don't know, you know, but Castrol and BP is just fine. They have the dollars. And, you know, Castrol used to sponsor Renault back in the day when they were powering Williams with Jacques Villeneuve. So that's fine. It could be a winning combination.
Yeah, and BP can get a lot of publicity if the second U.S. Grand Prix takes place in Louisiana.
Very funny. You're a funny guy.
Yes, yes. That was Zinger of the Day, sir.
Thank you.
So, here we are, sir. Would you like to introduce what we are doing next, sir?
Well, this is it. This is the pinnacle for F1 Weekly, the top of the top, the top of the pops. Of course, we're talking about the Bravissimo. The coup interview of 2017 for F1Weekly.com. It's a great way to start the season, the year, with this interview. And, of course, I mean the Bravo Bravo himself, Giancarlo Fisichella.
Shall we take a quick commercial and come back with the interview?
We'll be back after this brief message.
Thinking of a career in Formula One? Already have a motorsports job, but thinking about jumping into F1? Our team at Motorsports Career Advisor recently finalized the results of our interviews with several top motorsports recruiters and has compiled them into our 2017 Motorsports Resource Guide called The Number One Recruiter Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. If you've heard our radio spots before, maybe you don't know that up to 1,000 action-oriented motorsports enthusiasts contact us every month to get our guides. But it was our motorsports recruiter partners that challenged us to go even further. And here's what they convinced us to do. For a limited time, we're giving away a pre-release sample of our 2017 resource guide, the number one recruiter-tested method to landing the interview for your dream job in F1. Get yours now at F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com. F1 is extremely competitive. Be the first to see the guide and jump ahead of your job competition. Go to F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com now for the 2017 pre-release before the countdown expires, and you'll get a sneak peek at a guide that others will soon pay to receive. That's F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we present the main feature of the program, our conversation with Giancarlo Fisichella, and my special thanks to Ms. Barbara Burns of Burns PR Group in making this interview possible.
Okay. Yeah, I prepared some questions. You're going to be very busy, so let me ask you some questions, okay? Motor racing is very popular in your country and England. How old were you when you got the racing bug?
Well, my father was a big fan of Formula One, and already when I was 5-6 years old, I was following the race in television with him. And then when I was 8, I started my career in a go-kart. And from there, I become a Formula One driver, and I'm still driving, yeah.
Fantastic. Now, from your karting days, who were some of your toughest competitors who also became professional drivers?
Well, one of the guys which is here competing with me even tomorrow is Jan Magnussen.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And then there are a few younger drivers than me, like my teammate Tony Willander, like Garcia. Then I was racing with Verstappen. Now, you know, the son is racing Formula One. And, yeah, I mean, lots of very good drivers are still working, still in a few different categories.
You know, you mentioned Max Verstappen, and I met his mom a couple of years ago, and she said she raced against you. Is that correct?
That's correct. She was quick. She was on the same age as me, and I remember very well her, because we were friends. She was the girlfriend of one of my best friends, was Italian driver, and then she came even a friend of my wife. So we spent lots of time together.
Great. Okay, you had a great season in 1994, winning the Italian F3 Championship, the Monaco F3 race, and the qualifying race in Macau. Between Monaco and Macau, which is more challenging?
Yeah, I think Macau is more challenging. It's first of all, it's a much longer lens, and there are much more difficult corner. It's a great circuit, but even Monte Carlo with a Formula One car is just amazing. It's a difficult circuit. You can imagine how much concentration you need, and how fit you must be to do this race.
Okay. Now, after this great season, you race for Alfa Romeo in touring cars. Alfa Romeo is another name I love. How much did you enjoy this compared to single-seaters, and what were the highlights from these 2 years?
Yeah, it was great. You know, DTM by this period was one of the best aim for the drivers. So I was had a good opportunity to race with Alfa Romeo, and I was fighting always to win races, and you know, work for a brand like Alfa Romeo was great. I was really proud of it.
I love their logo. Okay, now, in your F1 days, maybe even today, Mr. Enrico Zanarini was your manager. Was he the reason you went to Alfa Romeo?
Enrico was working with Alfa Romeo many years ago, in a rally race. And then was Eddie Irvine's manager. Then when Eddie stopped his career in Formula One, Enrico became my manager.
Okay, good.
Now, you arrived in Formula One with Minardi. What was your first impression of the world of F1? I want to ask you this thing. Your fellow Italian, Mr. Zanardi, he wrote in his book that the first thing that surprised him is how many useless people were on the grid before the start of the race. Was that your impression also?
Yeah, I was... It was my impression also, and I remember, you know, in my first race in Formula One was in Melbourne, and I couldn't believe the first time when I was next to, in the driver's briefing, next to Michael Schumacher, Gerhard Berger, Jean Alesi. It was great for me, and I had great memories, yeah.
Now, this is interesting. I was watching this as I have all the races. You collected your first Grand Prix trophy at Imola in 2003, but the victory was scored thousands of miles away in Interlagos. Now, what I want to know is this. Your team owner, Eddie Irvine, is very flashy with dress and language. What kind of language did he use that day when he found out that Kimi was the winner?
Yeah, it was. I can't say what which kind of words he used. But we know, we were sure we were the winner. Yeah. So we were a little bit upset about it. And but yeah, after 1 week, they understood that there was a big mistake by the people, or yeah, official people there, and they gave me back the victory.
Now, your pole and second place at Spa led to the drive with Ferrari at Monza. What was that feeling like for an Italian driver driving for Ferrari? And is the pressure for driving Ferrari that much bigger?
Oh, yeah. I was, you know, I did, since this moment, I did 13 years in Formula One. But when I signed with Ferrari to do the last five races of the season in 2009, it was amazing. And... you know, to do the first race in Ferrari in Monza was a huge thing. So there was a lot of pressure. It was great for me. You know, another dream of my life became true. But unfortunately, the car wasn't easy and wasn't quick enough, and it was a bit difficult for me.
Now, you said you were not quick. Obviously, you're a quick driver. Does it really take a lot of time to get used to Formula One and going from one team to another team?
You know, in the middle of the season, it's not easy at all. Even because the Ferrari car was different than the Force India. In the Ferrari car, there was the KERS. There was the front flap adjustment by electronically. So I need to learn a lot just in the Friday morning pre-practice, which is not enough.
Now, you had two teammates in Formula One who were not easy teammates in terms of personality. Maybe one was very political, or so they say. How was your relationship with Ralf Schumacher and Fernando Alonso?
Well, Ralf was not great. You know, we were at the beginning of the season, of the career in Formula One, and there was not a good friendship. With Fernando, it was good. We won two championships. We work together, and we are still very, very friends. So Fernando is a great guy, great driver.
You know, talking of Fernando, now this was after you left Renault. It was reported in the media that Mr. Zanarini made some comments that you did not get a fair, like a sort of a fair deal at Renault. They were more interested in Alonso. Is that your feeling also?
No, I mean, it was a difficult... I started my first race in Renault with pole position and victory. Then after that, I had some issue on the electronic stuff or mechanical stuff, and I couldn't score enough points to fight for the championship. So we prefer to, you know, help Fernando to win the driver's championship, but it was important to win even the constructor championship. So we won two championships. Drivers and constructors, and I did my best, and I'm proud of it.
Now, one race that, you know, I was hoping, and I used to watch at 5 in the morning in California with a couple of my racing buddies, you came very, very close to winning the Japanese Grand Prix in 2005. Mm. When something like that happens, you lose the lead on the last lap. How long it takes to recover from that kind of a loss?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a drop of the engine in the last 10 laps, and Kimi was catching me very quickly. Unfortunately, I was 10 kilometers lower on the straight finish line, and I couldn't do anything. So
you're a good man. You did not take him out. You know, I know a lot of people. What did the team say to you? Did they want you to take him out?
No, they knew that there was a problem with the engine, so it was important to score points for the championship.
Yeah, great. Okay, now you raced in Formula One for 7 teams. Which team was the best environment in terms of, letting the driver thrive and, not put any unnecessary pressure on the driver?
Well, I think, Renault by 2005, 2006 was a great team. They were very clever. The car was very good, and the people, organization-wise, it was amazing. But even in Ferrari, when I went to in Ferrari 2009, was great team.
Okay. Now you've raced at Le Mans. How would you compare racing at Le Mans 24 hours compared to Daytona 24 hours?
Well, different, track first of all, then different atmosphere. Different rules, especially different rules in Daytona. You got a lot of full course yellow, and you got a chance to gain one lap when you are behind the safety car. In Le Mans, is not possible. So if you are one, two laps behind the leader after a few hours of race, nothing is finished. In Le Mans, it's more difficult to recover in that problem. So it's a different... It's 24 hours, both 24 hours, but different styling,
What's it like going at Mulsanne at 200 miles per hour at 2 in the morning?
It's not easy. The visibility is quite low, and then you need to be concentrate on the road, and even on the prototype, they are coming behind you very quickly. Plus the difficulty of of the body, you are already tired, and in your mind you got still 10 hours to go, 12 hours to go, so it's a very, very difficult race physically and mentally.
Okay, in sports car racing, Porsche has been historically a big competitor for Ferrari. This year they're going with a mid-engine layout, and a lot of people are asking them in their press conference, do you think that's cheating, or it's just a smart way of doing things for them?
Well, I can't say this. I think there are rules, and there is the federation who's looking on it. Maybe it's okay. I think it's okay. It will be very tough to beat them with a new car. It looks very competitive. Let's see if it's reliable already for the 24 hours.
Okay, Italy is famous for, fashion and flair and all that. And you've raced in Formula One for many years, so you're totally qualified for this next question. Which country has the best-looking grid girls?
Usually Hungary.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good. Okay, now you've raced here quite a bit in the United States. What is your favorite track here in the United States and also in Formula One?
Well, there are lots of nice track here in America. Maybe my favorite is Virginia. It's Watts Glen and Road America.
The 2005 Indy, the Michelin fiasco. Yeah. At what stage were you told as a driver to come into? Actually, I was at that race, and when I looked at the big screen as the race was starting, it was not making this up. It was your car that I saw first coming in. You were Renault, right? 2005. When were you told as a driver that this is what you will have to do?
Well, the main reason was safety. So for safety issue, they asked us to do the out lap and come in, because the day before a couple of big accident. They had a big accident because Ralf Schumacher as well, because of the tire issue. So for safety was important to do it.
Okay. Now, when will we see Signor Christopher Fisichella in motor racing?
I don't know. I don't think so. He's a good soccer player.
Okay, and you want to keep him that way?
Yeah, I prefer it.
Okay. Now, you know, like I said to you earlier, I'm a big fan of Italian motor racing. Your country has a great heritage from Nuvolari to Ferrari and from Monza to Mille Miglia. What will it take to see the first Italian Formula One world champion since Ascari in 1953?
What
will it take? What does Italian Federation needs to do so we have a very competitive and guy who gets the chance?
Yeah, it's not easy to get in Formula One. You need support, big support from Federation, from sponsors, and from teams. Now I think Ferrari is giving a good opportunity to young drivers with the FDA, Ferrari Driver Academy, and especially to Giovinazzi, which is now the test driver. So I think Ferrari can help quite a lot.
Okay, thank you so much. Before you go, can you say, hi, I'm Giancarlo Fisichella, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Fisichella, and you are listening to F1 Weekly.
Grazie mille.
Thank you very much. All the best.
Fisico, grazie, mille grazie for speaking with the people at F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
Yes, sir. It was very nice to see him. And, like, you know, the only interview that will top this one is one, hopefully in a few years' time, we will have the opportunity to sit down and talk to a driver and about his epic 2007 season.
I don't remember very much about 2007.
Yeah, he will remind you gladly.
Massa remembers a lot about 2007.
Yeah, he remembers Hungary and he remembers Singapore. That's for damn sure.
Bravo.
Okay. So shall we now move into Motorsports Mondial?
Please, the globe is spinning and waiting for your touch.
Okay, sir. The Big D has got the American racing season. By the way, have you ever been to Daytona?
No. But I have purchased Dayton tires before.
Yes, check it out. I mean, you will like it. It's a very nice facility. Okay, the Big D has got the American racing season rolling with the Rolex 24 Hours. These cars are really hauling some serious speed when they are coming off the final turn and headed for the first turn, you know, the infield section. It looks very, very impressive. This was the 55th running of the event and had a very strong international feel of cars and drivers from Caddy and Corvettes to Ford GT. And apart from the usual Ferraris and Porsches, there were Lambos and Lexus. The North American driver lineup included, among many others, Scott Pruett. Scott, hi to my family, Pruett, I should say. Graham Rahal, Jeff Gordon, while the South American driver lineup included Christian Fittipaldi and Augusto Farfus, who is a factory BMW driver. European drivers included Felipe Albuquerque of Portugalistan, Max Angelelli of Italy, James Collado, and another of our favorites, Sam Bird, both from UK. Did you watch any of the race, sir?
I did. I caught the start. Very, very exciting. Cadillac on pole position. Cadillac did an outstanding job in a great-looking car as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, most of, you know, some years ago, when they were known as Grand-Am, their cars were not good-looking. They were like the Indy cars of the old days, the IRL days. Mm-hmm. But now the cars are beautiful. They sound good, and it looks very nice when these cars are chasing each other at very high speed. So when it was all said and done, it was a family affair. Wayne Taylor Racing Caddy was the winner with two of his kids, Ricky and Jordan, at the wheel, along with NASCAR legend Jeff Gordon and Max Angelelli, who has now retired from racing. Max was the driver of the safety car at the 1994 San Marino Grand Prix at Imola. No need to add anything to that if you know what I mean. Ricky was running second, less than 6 minutes to go, and I knew this, you know, anytime you have a couple of cars within half a second of each other in the final stages, you know, there will be some push and shove and argy-bargy. And then going into turn one, he gave a left tap to the leading Cadillac at Felipe Albuquerque and took the lead. Felipe, of course, did not agree with race control that it was a racing incident. He was expecting a 5-minute penalty or something, or 5-second penalty, I should say, that never came. But damage was done, and he and his co-drivers were left with no choice but to accept second place. The GT class was won by Dirk Müller of Germany, Joey Hand from Sacramento in Cali, and your homeboy Sebastian Bourdais in their number 66 Ford GT entered by Chip Ganassi Racing. That's a beautiful-looking Ford car. The GTD class was won by the Porsche 911 of Michael Christensen of Denmark and our amigo from Toronto, Daniel Murad, who was racing at Daytona for the first time. And some of our listeners will remember Michael Christensen used to race in Formula BMW against Esteban Gutierrez and, you know, people in that age group. And then some years ago, he took the right decision to go GT racing and is now a factory Porsche driver. So that's not a bad payday. And sir, as you know, we are still in January. We don't have any much racing going on around the world. So I thought maybe I'll do a recap of the history of the Daytona 24-hour race with your express written consent.
I just texted you.
Oh, okay, Pedro. Pedro de la Rogers, thank you. Many of the great legends of motor racing have raced and won here. Florida was home not only to the very first Formula One race in this country, but is still the home to the top two endurance sports car races. Daytona is one and Sebring 12 Hours is the second, and hopefully Moa will be there also in March. Have you ever been to Sebring, sir?
A couple of times.
Really good. The first 24-hour race at Daytona in 1966 was won by Ken Miles and Lloyd Ruby in a Ford GT40 Mark II. In 1967, Lorenzo Bendini and Chris Amon led a Ferrari 1-2-3. In 1968, Porsche won this race for the first time. This is interesting. This is what I really like, you know, when I look at old results. One of the drivers that day was Jochen Nierpasch, who later went on to become head of motorsports for BMW and also for Mercedes. And if I remember, he was the man in charge of Mercedes when they agreed to write a check to Eddie Jordan to take a German driver for the Belgian Grand Prix in 1991. And you know who I'm talking about.
Of course.
In 1969, Team Penske won the race with Mark Donohue and Chuck Parsons. In 1970 and 71, Pedro Rodriguez won in a Porsche 917 entered by John Wyatt Engineering. John Wyatt was the guy in England a young Joe Ramirez went to looking for a job after the death of his friend Ricardo Rodriguez, who was, of course, younger brother of Pedro. In 1972, the Daytona 24 Hours was run as Daytona 6 Hours. Mario Andretti and Jackie X were the winners in a Ferrari 312PB. Peter Gregg and Hurley Hayward won the race in 73 and 75 in their Brumos Porsche Carrera. There was no race in 1974 due to energy crisis. Gregg would win again in 76 and 78, while Hurley Hayward was also among the winning drivers in 1977, 79, and 1991. The winning drivers in 1982 were father and son team of John Paul Sr. and Jr. and Rolf Stommelen. There is a sad and long story of drugs and other mayhem behind John Paul Sr. Rolf Stommelen was from Cologne, Germany, and it was his Lola that crashed and killed a few people during the 1975 Spanish Grand Prix at Montjuic Park in Barcelona. He later lost his own life in a sports car race at Riverside in Southern California. The 1992 Daytona 24 Hours was a case of turning Japanese. Nissan was the winning car with Masahiro Hasemi, Kazuyoshi Hoshino, and Toshio Suzuki. Other Daytona winners include A.J. Foyt, Alan Sir Jr., Al Holbert, John Andretti, Derek Bell, Martin Brundle, Bobby and Graham Rahal, Scott Pruett, and our favorite Montoya. Now we come to a racing series, which is called Toyota Racing Series, which has become in the last 4 or 5 years very popular because drivers racing in Europe can go there to New Zealand and race there in January, February. So they do 5 weekends, one after the other, 3 races per weekend. So you have, within like 6 weeks, 15 races. And very happy to report my homie Inam Ahmed took his first win in race 2 of the weekend in Hampton Downs, setting a new track record on the final lap. The win was impressive as he fought off a challenge from championship leader Richard Verschuur, another Dutch treat from Red Bull. And I think, you know, we've mentioned about Lando Norris from England. I think this Richard Verschuur will have a big career in racing. Last year, he won the Spanish F4 and also the North European Zone Formula 4 Championship. So he is a quick man. third man on the podium was the third coming of Piquet, this time Pedro Piquet. He also raced in this series last year. So, sir, there you have it, a little bit brief Motorsports Mondial, because we are still in the cold and frigid days of January. By the way, I'm loving the winter in Florida, that's for sure.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of skiing and, you know, winter sports.
Yeah, I think, you know, last year during the winter, I had a sweater one day, and I had a light jacket on today, and I think that should be it for this winter.
That's fine. Don't worry. You'll get your hurricane coming up pretty soon, and whammo!
Yes, and I don't like getting those notices, you know, be ready for a siren and notification and get in your car and drive 200 miles. I came pretty close to that last year, but hopefully it will be all right.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, very exciting. And, of course, we're getting announcements now from the Formula One teams when the unveiling will be beginning, and that's going to be in mid to late February, but always lots of anticipation.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see how these cars look like. And it will see, you know, I'm also very excited to see what will happen at the reigning world champions between their new, what you would call, whippersnapper. It's going to be a tough challenge for Valtteri Bottas. It can really, do you think he will rattle Lewis Hamilton's cage?
Absolutely. I think Hamilton is going to fall off the wagon. And, you know, one of his pierced ears will have a problem. He'll get a little infection. There's always going to be something.
Wow, you got this whole figured out for Bottas, huh?
I do. I'm very, very good. Very, very good. But no, I think Bottas is going to be better. You know, the problem is he's had a bad car. Let's see what he can do in a great car, if indeed the Mercedes is a great car. Now, we all have seen it before. You quit a team, you go to another team. That team was winning world championships, and they're not winning world championships. Ask Sebastian Vettel.
And also the guy who won the championship in 2005 and 2006. Why not ask him?
El Fernando, el más macho del mundo?
You know, I got to tell you something. Fernando Alonso, Montoya, and Kimi Raikkonen started Formula One racing in 2001, Melbourne. And as far as Kimi Raikkonen and his reputation when he was at Mercedes and Nando is concerned, I cannot believe one will go out of Formula One with one championship, Kimi, and most probably Nando will go out with two. It is absolutely mind-blowing that the guy who basically dethroned the Red Baron, shut down the Red Baron, and defended the championship against him in a very impressive fashion, has not won a championship. I mean, we know he came very close a few times, but the record books do not show him as a three-time world champion as we speak. Switching to another team, Sauber, they will have Pascal Wehrlein and Marcus Ericsson. How do you think Pascal will do there?
I think they're going to be okay. I mean, I don't expect to see great things. It was sad because Sauber was looking pretty good for a couple of years, but after that, they just went downhill. They seem to have gone backwards in the past 3 years.
Yeah, you know, and this year they'll be using last year's Ferrari engine. There are reports, not confirmed though, that next year they will go with Honda engine.
That's true. I've heard that, and I think it's possible.
Yeah, it's very sad, you know, that our friend Mr. Felipe Nasr has been squeezed out of Formula One racing, and, you know, he lost his big sponsor, Banco do Brasil, and so that seat has gone to Pascal Wehrlein, and Sauber got a lot of money courtesy of his 2 points in Brazil, and that's pretty much what was the final blow for Manor, losing that slot to Sauber. So we'll see how this thing works out. I hope Felipe gets a decent ride in IndyCar racing, but I haven't heard anything from his camp, so we'll have to see which way he goes.
Yeah, and of course, let's not forget K-Mag, who's now at Haas.
Mm-hmm.
He says that the new cars are going to suit his style, so he's going to be actually successful in challenging Romain Grosjean.
Yeah, Romain Grosjean needs a challenge, and it is amazing. You know, I still, you know, cannot figure out how the fate has treated Sergio Perez and Esteban Gutierrez. I mean, everybody talked about Esteban when he was in Junior Series, how he'll be the man in Formula One someday. And Sergio Perez was just, you know, lukewarm at best in Junior Series. It's amazing, you know, when Esteban went to Sauber as teammate to Nico Hülkenberg, it was pretty much the same scenario that was played out last year against Romain Grosjean. I mean, Hülkenberg was just the alpha male dog in that team.
That's very, very true. And Sergio Perez has had good luck. He's had great drives, and he's had great podiums. You know, that podium in Monaco really is great for your CV.
Yeah, and that almost that win in Malaysia over Nando, man, that was a very impressive drive too.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Sergio has done a great job. And I think Force India, once again, for a small team with Vijay Mallya, the refugee on the loose, I still think they're going to be doing well on the grid.
Yeah, I think so. I think they have good people around them, and they have this, you know, young Esteban Ocon as the young driver. I think he will push Senor Perez sooner or later.
I think so too, and they have the Mercedes Package, so they could very well be in the top five.
Yeah, let's hope it happens. And I tell you what, who do you think will win a race? First time race winner this year.
Fernando.
No, he has won a race before.
Oh, that's right, I forgot. First time race winner. Ooh, that's going to be tough. It could be Bottas.
Bottas is a given if they have a package that, you know, stays head and shoulders above everything else. Anybody else you see who might become Sergio Perez, you think might win? Or do you think Nico Hülkenberg has a chance with Renault?
You know, the Renault package is such a mystery right now. It's really hard. You know, they lost their main guy, which I'm sure disappointed Nico Hülkenberg. But who knows? You know, with the rule changes, which Christian Horner calls window dressing, you know, they're not that big of a change. It's really hard to tell. And I'm liking what I'm hearing from, the rumor mill out of Liberty that, Formula One should have nothing to do with road cars. They should be racing and racing only. So we could have some great cars in the very, very near future.
No, you know, I have to say, you know, motor racing, and we're not going to save the world by bringing turbocharging. And some of the stuff, cars, this and that, can stay. But this idea that, you know, it has to be, you know, green and this and that. I mean, come on, this is motor racing. Let's enjoy and, worry about other things after the race.
Let me put it this way. You know how you drive down I-5 and you go by the Harris Ranch and you smell the manure from all the cattle that are in that area? Well, just one day of those cows and their flatulence will equal all the races combined.
Wow, that's why they call it, it's called the Cattleman Colony, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a beautiful part of California, Central Valley, right?
Yes, it's a beautiful part of the world. It's just a little stinky.
Stinko, as you call it.
Stinko, yes, indeed. So there you have it, Nas. So what's the next race that you're going to be attending? Sebring?
Well, Sebring is in March, and so is the first IndyCar race here in St. Petersburg, which is just across the, you know, water here. So I will do both of them. The only issue now I have is to try to finagle some time off from work, which, you know, I'm normally putting in a request 2 months in advance. But, you know, I can always work some extra hours and keep the...
I'll call your boss. We'll get all that cleared up.
Yeah, so the game plan is, you know, I'll tell you one good thing about being in Florida on the East Coast. You know, in 2 hours, you can be in U.S. Grand Prix, you can be in Atlanta in less than 2 hours. So what I'm trying to do now is this. So what I really want to do is, I think I've seen enough motor races in my life. I really want to do interviews. And the way to do it is go be there on Thursday and Friday. Because, you know, like on Saturday, which was the, you know, start of the race, there was a very big crowd at Daytona. So things get busy and, you know, then people start saying, oh, a race is about to start. So this is what I'm thinking. I'm also thinking of doing the Petit Le Mans, which is in Road Atlanta, Georgia, not too far from here. Delta has a flight from here to Atlanta, I guess, every 30 minutes. And then one thing very interesting. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, we also had a nice chat with Harry Tinknell, who was a kid we've been following for a long time, and he's now a young man. He's driving for the Ford GT program in World Endurance Championship. He was at Daytona for Chip Ganassi Racing. And the World Endurance Championship, WEC as they call it, they will be in Austin in September. Then a week later or a week before, they will be in Mexico. So I would like to attend one of those functions also, so we can, you know, do a lot of interviews and then go from there. And there will also be a Trans Am race, which, you know, used to be very strong, not anymore. But I want to go to quite a few races. It will be an issue of what time. I would really like to do the Canadian Grand Prix again, if possible.
Of course, no problem, Nass. We'll get that all set up for you. I'll talk to the financial department at F1Weekly.com. We'll get you going.
Okay, so how about you? Are you going to the Laguna Seca, Monterey Historic, or whatever it is called now?
Of course. They even have a special parking lot, F1 Weekly only.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Any idea what the featured mark is?
You know, I don't have any idea. They haven't really announced it yet, but as soon as I know, the people will know.
Yes. Yeah, please keep me posted.
Absolutely, Nass. Fantastic. Once again, I tip my hat for the Bravissimo Fisichella interview. That really makes my month.
Yeah, same here. Thank you for your cooperation in getting me the media pass.
Of course.
It makes life easier, and so we appreciate that. And I hope, you know, people continue listening to F1 Weekly. Oh, I got to tell you something. You know this website, you're going to like this, and we did not do this, okay? You know this website called Crash.net?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people post on Facebook a link from there. Anyway, there was an article, top 10 drivers who should be in Formula One. Okay. And there were names like kid we have followed for many years, Robin Frains, and some other drivers, some names I was kind of surprised that were there. And then, you know, at the end of the story, people have their comments, you know. So one guy wrote, apart from like one or two guys, I've not heard of anybody. I don't even know who they are or what they do. So the gentleman wrote that, yes, these people do not get a lot of coverage in the United States media, but if you listen to F1 Weekly podcast.
Really?
Yeah, and I was like, wow, that's very impressive.
It wasn't my mom, was it?
No, it was a gentleman from Colorado, and, you know, you may have to send him one of those special F1 Weekly checks.
Or even better, maybe an F1 Weekly coffee mug.
There you go.
I've got a couple of those left in the inventory, and you never know. Somebody special might do something for F1 Weekly, and they will get that coffee mug.
There you go.
So there you go, Nass. I want to thank you again for another outstanding job at the Daytona 24 Hours. You're welcome. The bonus check is in the mail. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
stick. There's a sex machine to all the chicks. You're damn right. Who is the man that would risk his neck for his brother, man?